This is Digital Story Podcast number 975, November 26, 2024. Today's theme is Planned Obsolescence Doesn't Work for Photography. I'm Derek Story. If you're lucky, your smartphone is viable for 4 years. Your laptop, not much longer than that. Planned obsolescence is a real problem in the world of technology. It's expensive and it creates tons of hazardous waste that's harmful for our planet. But one area in particular seems immune to this diabolical scheme despite manufacturers' efforts: photography. I'll explain why and its benefits to you in today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. This is yet another time when I'm really happy I'm a photographer and not something else. because we have the opportunity, because of our craft and because of the tools that we use for our craft, to fight back a little bit against the constant push of marketing and sales and, you know, gaining more and more brand new gear. Right now, I know that gear acquisition syndrome, GAS, is an issue that we all have to fight. However, it can manifest in many different ways, in that gear acquisition can be with stuff that already exists in the world and not brand new gear. Now, this will make a lot more sense to you as I get a little deeper in the podcast. So now, starting out with the term planned obsolescence, if you don't buy into that concept, that that's something that is real in our world and that is used to get us to continue to buy and buy and buy at a regular pace, I have a show for you to watch. And it's free if you have Netflix. It's a documentary and it's called Buy Now, The Shopping Conspiracy. If you watch that show, then you'll understand why I decided to use planned obsolescence in the title for today's show, because I think it's a real thing. Now, that's the bad news, that it's a real thing in the world. And with our smartphones, with our computers, with our coffee makers, with all sorts of stuff. But photography has the ability to push back against that. And I'm going to go into the reasons why. And not only is it cool that we can push back against this phenomenon, but it's fun and it's artistic and it's very satisfying, the process of doing so. So let's get into it a little bit here. Now, what I'm talking about is not having to buy a new camera every time a new model comes out in the brand that we prefer, right? We can choose to buy a new camera if it's time, if we really need one, if our circumstances, you know, require that we need a certain functionality for a project we want to work on or something like that. Or we can choose not to. We can choose not to buy a new camera and keep using our old one. And in fact, we can even reach back into the closet and pull out cameras that are 10 years old, that are 12 years old, and put them to work too. Now you go, well, I can't do that because, you know, those cameras aren't as good. They don't take as good of pictures as the cameras we have today. That's an interesting thought and one that I don't totally buy into. I want to talk a little bit about what I call the arc of technology evolution. Digital photography definitely had one. When we started to transition from film photography into digital photography, we had to replace our cameras or upgrade our cameras more often because it was the beginning of the technology development. So for instance, that first camera that came out that was 1 megapixel, that was what you could get or what you could afford at the time. And then a year later or 2 years later, you could get one that was 2 megapixels and then 4 megapixels and then 6 megapixels. And so every time that that new version came out that went from 1 to 2 or 2 to 4 or 4 to 6, that was a big jump in quality, big jump in resolution. And plus all the features that came with it. You know, all the improvements in signal processing and all that kind of stuff. So in the early days, we really did have to upgrade more often. Now, unfortunately, that part of the cycle, that creates a lot of waste because that 2-megapixel camera that we don't really feel like we could use anymore, then what do we do with that? And honestly, hardly anyone else wants that camera as well. They want something that has more resolution and takes, you know, better pictures. What happened though, when we get up to 12 megapixels or 16 megapixels, somewhere in there, the technology curve begins to flatten out a little bit. So we don't have this hockey stick up, you know, tick straight up technology development going from 2 megapixels to 4 megapixels to 6 to 8 to 12, you know, all that kind of thing. It starts to level out a bit. And we've even heard that the megapixel wars are over. Now, that doesn't mean that camera manufacturers still don't push big megapixel cameras as, you know, part of their marketing effort for them. But the fact of the matter is, we don't really need super high megapixel cameras for our normal work. And there's a lot of reasons for that, some of which I'm going to touch on today. My belief is that once we got to 16 megapixels or so, those cameras are viable cameras that we've flattened out. And then, you know, older cameras that are 20 megapixels or 24 megapixels, they're still extremely viable because they've reached a certain threshold of resolution. And along with that comes dynamic range, noise reduction, you know, all sorts of good stuff, you know, high ISO performance, all that sort of tied in together. So now we're at a point in digital photography where we don't really need to buy a camera just to take a good picture, or a picture that can stand the test of time, or a picture that we can enlarge to a 13 by 19 inch print, or any of that, because older cameras do that just as well. And you go, well, maybe not just as well. Well, we do have the ability to have them do that just as well. And part of that magic is that software, photo software, is extending the life of our hardware. How is it doing that? Well, I'll give you two examples: AI upsampling and AI noise reduction. Those are two very good examples. So let's say that you have an older camera that's 16 megapixels, but you like it, you have lenses for it, the lenses work on your newer cameras, maybe it has some unique features, and you've always had a fondness for that camera. There isn't really a reason why you can't continue to use that camera for your everyday work. Now, maybe not some specialized, you know, wedding assignment or something like that, but probably 80% of what you shoot, you can use that camera. In part because rarely do you need images that are bigger than 16 megapixels. And if you do need more resolution, then the upsampling software we have allows you to take those images up to 24 megapixels or 48 megapixels using AI. And the AI upsampling is fantastic. It works great. And so now basically any camera that has decent dynamic range, decent resolution, can produce modern output. Same goes for noise reduction. You go, well, my older camera, I really only felt comfortable shooting up to ISO 400 or 800 or 1600. After that, it just gets too noisy. Even though the images are sharp, it just gets too noisy compared to cameras that are available now. Well, once again, AI to the rescue, because AI noise reduction is amazing. It's so amazing. Not only does it get rid of the noise, it retains or even improves the detail of the image in the process. So noise is no longer a reason not to use an older camera. Our fantastic software that we have from Adobe, from Skylum, from Topaz, from it goes on and on and on, all that amazing software on one allows us to extend the life of our existing digital cameras that are older. So we don't necessarily have to replace them, especially if they have some unique features. I'll give you an example of that in my own life right here. So I'm getting ready to go to Costa Rica, as many of you know. I have a workshop there in January. So I'm definitely taking the OM-1 because that telephoto lens that I have for it, the 40-150 with the 1.4x, is just amazing. I just love it. And I'll probably also take my, you know, wide to mid-range zoom and maybe another prime or so. But I'm also taking a Pentax KP, a 2017 APS-C sensor, 24 megapixel, Pentax KP. Now, why am I taking that as well? Because I have this fantastic lens for it, the Pentax D FA 70-210mm f/4. And it is a perfect lens for inclement conditions, as is the camera. So the KP is super weather sealed. I've had it out in snow, I've had it out in pouring rain, it's just fine. As is the 70-210mm lens, is also weather resistant. And it has internal focusing and internal zooming. So you just have the lens. You don't have any barrel extending and retracting and, you know, all sorts of places for water to get into. It is just this solid camera and solid lens. That lens is fantastic. I mean, it is a wonderful lens. I just absolutely love it. So I am taking that camera and that lens because for the environment that I'm going to be in Costa Rica, where I need some reach and I need weather resistance, it works great. It works absolutely fantastic, even though it's 2017. Now, I've been shooting with that camera off and on, and I've been shooting with it on a lot recently, really kind of putting it through its paces to make sure that I'm not being foolhardy going all the way to Costa Rica, you know, packing a camera that's 8 years old. I'm not crazy. I took pictures with it. They look great, and especially with that lens. Now, the other camera that I'm going to take is a 2015 Olympus TG4. Why? Well, again, it's perfect for the environment. It's been through its paces. It does everything that I want to do, and it still takes great pictures. There's no reason not to take it. There's no reason to buy a new one when the old one works perfectly well. Now, if I did have any problems with either of those cameras in terms of resolution or noise or anything like that, then we go back to, I have the AI software for noise reduction. So even if I did need to fix something, I could. The other fun thing about the Pentax KP is that all my old Pentax lenses work on it as well. And some of them really give me a unique look that I just can't get with modern digital lenses. So the fun factor seems to expand tremendously. Okay, let's go on here. Let's go back to talking about glass, because never underestimate the value of a great lens on an older camera. You just heard me rave about that 70-210 f/4, which, by the way, turns out to be a 105-315 because it's on an APS-C sensor. If you have questions about an older camera body, put the best lens that you have, the best lens that you have for it on that camera and test it. I think you will be surprised, because there is a big difference between great glass and mediocre glass. And you really start to notice it when you enlarge, let's say 200% on your high resolution 4K LCD screen. You'll notice a difference between great glass and mediocre glass. And if you want to get a little bit more quality, or even a lot more quality out of your older camera, put good glass on it. Use only your best glass for it. And don't use the cheap kit lens that came with it or whatever you happen to have that's only so-so. Never underestimate the value of great lens on an older camera. It's almost magical. Now, all cameras have strengths and weaknesses. And one of the arguments for hanging on to some of your older cameras is because they have a particular function that works well. In my case, both the Pentax and the Olympus cameras have amazing weather resistance. Now I'm going somewhere where it rains a lot. I'm going somewhere where I might have wind. I'm going somewhere where there's high moisture, where there's all these sorts of things. These cameras were designed to deal with those conditions. Now, I don't need to go out and buy a brand new camera just for this expedition so that I can have a brand new camera that has weather resistance when I have a camera that's 8 years old that has fantastic weather resistance, right? And especially, again, because of all the things that we can do with the images to make them basically very close to anything that would come out of a new camera. When you have a specialty camera that's stashed away, don't forget about it, especially if you're going somewhere where that's going to be very handy. Now, when you're in challenging climate conditions, having two camera bodies, I think, is very important because you don't want to be changing lenses in the rain. You don't want to be changing lenses in the wind, all that kind of stuff. So it's better to have, let's say, your long telephoto on one camera body and then a short to maybe mid-range zoom on the other camera body and just leave them on there. If you get back to the car, you can change them, or back to the hotel room or whatever. But when you're out in the field, you don't want to be changing. So that second camera body can be an older camera. You don't have to go out and buy a new one. It can be an older camera that comes in very handy for that situation, without compromise in image quality, in all honesty. More good news on this front, this fight against planned obsolescence, is that we can still get batteries for our older cameras. This is just fantastic. If the cell that you have right now for your camera, the cells that you have, maybe are just, they've lost a little bit of their oomph over the years, they're not quite up to snuff, you can get new cells for it. You can get new cells. Hang on to your older cells. Maybe use them for storage, or in ultimate situation where you just run out of batteries, at least they'll get you 100 shots or something like that. But we can get new cells for our older cameras to breathe new life into them and to have them perform the way that we want them. So getting new batteries for older cameras is a thing that exists, and all you have to do is a little bit of shopping, and they don't even cost that much. Keep in mind that photography is also a creative pursuit. So we can go all the way back, if we want, to film cameras and uncoated lenses to create looks that are artistic and unique. Now, in other forms of technology, doing something like that doesn't make sense, right? Going all the way back to dot matrix printing, right, isn't something that aesthetically I think very many of us want to do. But going back to a film look is something that actually looks pretty good and can be very pleasing to the eye. So even a super old camera, and I'm talking about an old film camera or something, still can have functionality in our modern day work, depending on the looks and the creativity, the style that we want to have for a particular image or series of images. Now, have you ever pulled out an old camera, you know, one that you had stashed away, put on your favorite lens, then after an hour of using it, thought to yourself, now I remember why I love this camera so much? It just all comes back to you. There was a reason why you bought that camera in the first place, right? You didn't just buy it because you sort of liked it. No, you bought it because at the time, that was the camera that really sang to you. Well, that doesn't go away. When you pull out that old camera, fire it up, get some batteries in there, put on your favorite lens, go take some pictures with it, you'll go, wow, I really did like this camera. I really do like this camera. And then you're going, oh, but you know, the resolution isn't, oh, wait, that's not a problem. Oh, wait, I can't push the ISO up to 60. Oh, wait, maybe I can. Then you're going, maybe I could shoot a lot more with this camera than I had been, right? That's something to keep in mind. Go to the back of the closet, pull out some of those cameras that you just absolutely loved. I bet you you'll love them again. Honestly, this is where photography is different than other forms of technology. You're not going to pull out a 12-year-old smartphone, fire it up if it even works, right? probably can't even change the battery or anything in it, and then go, oh, wow, I miss using this 12-year-old smartphone. I miss using this dot matrix printer. I miss using this LCD computer screen that's 640 by 480. No, you're probably not going to say that with hardly any other digital item. But with our cameras, with their lenses that are beautiful and stand the test of time, you can say that. And I think more often than not, you will say that. Now, I understand the need for manufacturers to have us regularly update our cameras. They're trying to keep things moving, trying to keep profits soaring, all that kind of stuff. That's great. I totally get that. I'm not anti-business at all. But we can be more choosy about how we participate in that thanks to the longevity of our existing gear. So instead of always buying a new camera or whatever, maybe every now and then, if we really have to have something new, we can get a new lens that works on our older camera and on our camera that's even older than that, right? And then, so then we're extending the use of something that we already have. By doing so, we're going to save money, right? Because we're not buying as much, and we're going to be reducing electronic waste that, quite honestly, is so very harmful to the planet. Now, another angle to this, instead of buying a new lens, buy a used lens, right? If you really want to save more money, you can get a great used lens that may scratch your itch or that may meet the need of a project you're working on, and you don't even have to buy something new. Photography is one area in the world of technology where we can say no to the endless treadmill of upgrades. The power is in our hands to when we buy and what we choose to invest in. Radiant Photo 2 arrives, promising next generation photo editing. This is an article that's on fstoppers.com, and I have a link to it in the show note. This is an interesting piece of software, kind of a segue from our previous story. Let's hear what they have to say. Just when you thought you'd seen just about every editing tool, Radiant Photo comes along with a solid update to its Radiant Photo Editor that I first took a look at in 2022. Since then, there have been many improvements and new tools. One new feature of interest is the addition of AI, but Radiant Photo 2 does not use generative AI. Instead, it enhances pixels, not replaces them. This is an important philosophical distinction. It will please many photographers, but might not satisfy those looking to create new content within their images. The software is also very privacy-focused, which photographers will appreciate in these days of runaway privacy invasion software in social media. The company says that it ensures no personal data is transferred from the application to the company or the cloud. Every edit is processed locally on users' devices, making edits fast as well as private and secure. The creators of Radiant Photos state that they are committed to respecting intellectual property and empowering artists by providing assistive AI that enhances creativity instead of replacing it. Other notable features include live effects, which the company claims preserves a truly non-destructive workflow while delivering superior results. Its advanced 16-bit live effects system lets all tools work seamlessly together, providing consistent previews of adjustments and making it easy to revisit settings at any time. Unlike other software that often rasterizes images after masking, flattens them following major edits, or complicates reverting to basics like exposure after black and white conversion, Radiant Photo keeps every adjustment fully editable. Radiant Photo 2 will become available to current customers by the end of November. This will be followed by a public beta in December. It runs as standalone software on Windows and Mac OS. It can also be used as a native plugin inside Adobe Photoshop, Lightroom Classic, Corel Paint Shop Pro. Radiant Photo supports the following languages: English, Chinese, French, German, Japanese, Korean, Portuguese, Dutch, and Spanish. Radiant Photo 2 standalone application should run $159 for new customers. There's an introductory price of $129 until early January 2025. And then there are some additional plugins that you can get for it. So it sounds like a very interesting software. The before and after images in the article, of course, are impressive. They better be, right? But the thing that I notice that software seems to do real well, I think radiant is a key word here for the software, because it really sort of like cleans the window. You know, let's say that the window's a little hazy, a little smudgy. And if you wipe it clean, suddenly the image comes to life, is more vibrant, is more radiant. And that's what I'm really noticing. If there's a theme to the images here, is that they just have a certain glow, a certain life to them that they didn't have as originally captured. I haven't tried it yet either, but now after reading this, I have to tell you, and looking at the screenshots of the tools, which, by the way, the UI looks excellent on this. It looks really easy on the eyes as well as easy to use. I'm going to give it a try. It's called Radiant Photo 2, and it's coming to us a little bit later this month. We should all be able to get it in December. Canon and Amazon win lawsuit against counterfeit batteries and chargers. This is an article that's on Petapixel, and I have a link to it in the show notes. This has been going on for a while, and it looks like we finally have a judgment. Canon and Amazon have won a default judgment against 29 seller accounts that were engaged in what the two characterize as illegal sale of counterfeit Canon batteries and chargers. The lawsuit, jointly filed by Canon and Amazon, was originally filed in May 2024 and alleged 29 accounts were using Amazon's storefront to sell counterfeit Canon batteries. These types of batteries should not be confused with third-party batteries that are designed to work in Canon cameras but are not branded Canon. That's the difference. The issue is that these sellers were positioning their third-party options as first-party, which infringed on Canon's copyrights. For its part, Amazon said that it acted in conjunction with Canon to deal with these products as soon as it detected the attempted abuse. Amazon says it works closely with brands like Canon and global law enforcement agencies to hold bad actors accountable. As such, it was pleased to collaborate with the iconic camera brand. Petapixel's take on this is interesting. Photographers often spend their money on cameras and lenses, choosing to instead focus on saving when it comes to accessories like memory cards and batteries. These counterfeit brands know that they can take advantage of this rather predictable action by selling what appears to be legitimate Canon products that are more affordable than other options. On Amazon, these discounted products can often just look like a good deal, as most buyers aren't paying attention to the camera brand's official sales. Canon's legal strategy can at times seem overly aggressive, but that approach isn't without reason. This is a legitimate problem, and if Canon doesn't take actions, buyers could end up faulting Canon for the poor performance of the counterfeit product. I agree with that. If I buy from Canon, I want it to be Canon. If it says Nikon, I want it to be from Nikon. And on and on. Okay, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. I want to start out with last week's featured topic, our photography workshops. Now, if you're interested in going to a photography workshop, I suggest that, especially a physical in-person workshop, we have one open, and it's a fantastic one. It's the one in November in Sonoma County where we go Safari West, we go to wine country, we go out to the coast. It's an amazing workshop. We just did it. So it's all fresh in my mind. We still have seats open for that. Our Redwoods workshop and our Eastern Sierra workshops have sold out. So those are full for the moment. However, if you had your heart set on going to one of those, I do maintain a waiting list, and you can send me an email using the contact form on thenimblephotographer.com and just say, hey, can you put me on the waiting list for this particular workshop? The online workshops, we can accommodate more people because they are online. We don't have to drive you around in cars, and that makes it a little bit easier. But those are selling well. So they are all available right now, and they're fresh and new and exciting. So if you're thinking about maybe giving a gift to someone or going yourself to one of these online workshops, just sort of keep an eye on it, right? I would say that they all should be pretty much viable through December. But then after that, we'll start to fill up on the online workshops as well. So don't dilly-dally too long. Try to sign up for one that you would like by the first of the year just to make sure that you can get a seat. And I'm really looking forward to all of these workshops next year. You know, it's rainy and cold outside right now, and I'm thinking, man, wouldn't it be nice to be in the Eastern Sierra? Oh, well, soon enough, right? Soon enough. If you're interested in learning more about our workshops or signing up for one of them, I have a link in the show notes, or go to thenimblephotographer.com or go to thedigitalstory.com and click on workshops in the top nav bar. I want to give a big thanks to our Inner Circle members. These folks not only support this community month in and month out, support this podcast, they are also a force when it comes to attending our workshops. I think in part because they get a discount and they want to apply that discount to having fun with other photographers. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member and you're thinking of signing up for a workshop, I recommend becoming the member first. Then that way you will get the discount code for all of our workshops and activities. Depending on what workshop you choose or how many workshops you attend, you can save more money with a discount code than it would cost you to support this community for an entire year. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members for their activity, for their participation, and for their support. You can find out more by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. And finally, I want to say hello to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of The Digital Story. These folks support our community, but even more importantly, they support inkjet printing. Now, I have some fine art cards in process right now, and I'm getting ready to do for the holidays, because there's no more personal greeting than a fine art card that you make yourself. You take the photo, you design the card, you print the card, and then you give it to the person that's important to you, the person that you're sharing a gift with. Now's a good time to start doing that. You don't want to save all of your printing for the night before gift giving. So I suggest you click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of The Digital Story. Get your supplies now. Use our discount code to get free shipping. Get everything organized. Start printing now, and then you'll have everything ready to go when it's time to share gifts. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this community. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more great stuff for next week. For those of us in the U.S., have a happy Thanksgiving. I'll see you after the holiday. Until Tuesday, bye-bye now.